T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Sets up, has time, fires it deep down the left side, got a man wide open, caught, touchdown Buffalo. Emmanuel Sanders had single coverage, he broke free at the 5 and scooted into the end zone for the Buffalo go-ahead touchdown.
All right, I asked Brayton to play that for us for a reason, because that's one of the plays featured in a very lengthy, very dense, not like your stupid dense, but
yeah,
like
thorough
dense. Like a cheesecake kind of dense.
Mm.
Like a good,
yum.
You know, like a
heavy
tort. A tort. How's that?
Yeah.
Delicious tort. Ollie Connolly has a piece. I tweeted out last night. I'll tweet it out again today. He's going to join us on Monday morning. He's going to come on the show to talk about this. He did a very dense All-22 breakdown of Josh Allen and the Bills, not just against the Chiefs this past week, Howard, but how they changed everything they did this year in the game against the Chiefs.
Hmm.
Basically, that they, for 4 weeks, ran a certain kind of offense. They were really spread out, not just like spread, you know, 4 receivers, 5 receivers, but the idea of how wide your formation is. They're very spread out the entire season for the most part, and they rolled into Kansas City with a game plan. Ollie's larger point is, with a game plan that had been like 3 years in the making.
Hmm.
That here, in this moment, in this Sunday night game, they were ready to unleash a plan that Kansas City had never seen from them before. And part of what he writes, I want to read you a quick little passage in here, because we don't have to get to like the minutiae and the actual film study. I think there are bigger points here and a lot of cool stuff worth talking about. So he basically says that it's a similar structure to what Mike McCarthy built for Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And what he means is, he writes, bleep wonderful things like winning through play design and crafting easy throws. That's for teams who don't trust their quarterback. Embrace the star nature of your star. And he says, he continues to write, they have a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback who just happened to make once-in-a-lifetime throws with regularity. They leaned into it. Stick 4 or 5 receivers in the pattern as often as possible. Let Allen try to create plays, be it hitting low-percentage throws at high-percentage clip or creating all by himself with his legs. That was the 2020 plan, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes on to talk about this against the Chiefs, how the first 4 weeks they sacrificed diversity, stylistic diversity. They had their plays, their formations, and they were happy to do the same boring thing every single week. They did not complicate their offense the first 4 weeks. And it's Ollie's opinion or his point that they did that because week 5 was going to be the Chiefs, and that's when they were going to unleash hell, basically.
Hmm.
And it's...
That's cool.
It's so if you want to read it, it's a super cool, long, make sure you set aside some time, read.
I guess what would be interesting from that is the whole idea, like you had mentioned, it was a game plan like 3 years in the making. But even if you just said it was a game plan that they just sat on for the first 4 weeks, to the point, I mean, we were getting calls last week after they trounced Houston, right? And people were calling up and saying, hey guys, you know, don't show too much. I hope they didn't show too much against the Texans or any, you know, you think Dable's been sitting on some gadget plays or some things,
yep,
to hold for Kansas City. And we're like, well, no, I mean, you got to win each game. I wouldn't, and they have tons of stuff. It's not like they emptied the playbook in the first 4 weeks. this is a kind of a different discussion then. It wasn't, wow, he sat back on a flea flicker that they had never shown before.
Right,
this is we did an overall scheme philosophy thing, and then we're going to give something completely different to Kansas City.
Right, which, you know, Sal's talked about this with us, like running back by game plan,
yeah.
right? And
yep.
how they will have very different plans for very different teams. I guess what the crux of this is that they could have had this game plan for another team too, but this game, it was too important. You know, it makes it, the whole point of it, I think, makes it so that the Bills, I don't know if the Chiefs will ever be able to stop them. They will not have an answer for them.
Yeah.
When they play again, and that's part of what was so encouraging about that game on Sunday night, was everything had been flipped, right? The Chiefs were the team that was just missing, and the Chiefs settled for a field goal on their first drive, and they had a fumble on a kickoff and everything. And the Bills looked like a team that was superior across the board, offense,
right.
defense. You and I, we can talk about how a flea flicker, a gadget play, the throw on the Pittsburgh, the fourth and one. But the other stuff, the real deep chess match that only, I think, like the really good football minds see, and there are some of those that are listening to this show right now that, you know the game and the formations much better than we do. To me, it signals, and a little bit of this goes without saying, but it's still kind of really cool to say, I think, that the Bills want to win the Super Bowl. They know they can win the Super Bowl, and they don't necessarily think that dressing up the offense against Washington does the job.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it's poker. It's not a hand, right? But like make a move in November because you are going to do something different with it in January.
Mm-hmm.
And to have waited 5 weeks to dump 20 they dumped like 20 of their plays, and they went heavier, more fullbacks on, or more tight ends, more fullbacks,
yeah.
right? Reggie Gilliam's on the field,
right.
Dawson Knox. This does get to the point we talked about yesterday, how Jay Skursky noted Cole Beasley's snap counts way down. Well, this kind of game plan, these kind of formations, what the Bills ran against the Chiefs, doesn't really feature Beasley as much.
Reggie Gilliam was on the field for 22 snaps. I'm going to guess that's a career high for him. He was on the field for 39% of the offensive snaps. Sweeney was on the field. Let's just put Gilliam in a tight end category for now. It just makes it easier. So Gilliam's on the field for 39%. Sweeney's on the field for 18%. Knox was on the field for all but two snaps. So that's a lot of two tight end sets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, geez, I don't know, did they do four wide receivers at any point the other night?
They ran one play in 10 personnel.
Wow. And you think back to week one when the majority, right, they were predominantly 10 personnel or even five wide receivers, right, against Pittsburgh. So, yeah, they wanted Gilliam and Sweeney and extra back or extra tight end out there a majority of the time against Kansas City.
Yeah. And there's a – think back to the game. Like, Ali writes this, and he does such a good breakdown. His point is on the first drive. You mentioned Gilliam. He wrote specifically about Reggie Gilliam and how much he's on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So he writes, on the first drive, the Bills come out in tight, condensed formations, extra bodies. Remember the first drive? What was it? Quarterbacks, like sweep plays.
Running, yeah.
They're running these huge power formations to one side because, and Collinsworth noted it right there, like, you got 8-on-7, you're going to take that every time. That was the first drive. The first drive for the Bills looked like a master class in that, whatever that strategy you would call that personnel package, what they did that day on that drive. There wasn't a whole lot of it the rest of the way. Then they changed it up again, and they kept the Chiefs on their heels the whole night. He basically says, you know, like, the Bills, this is about identity, right? They changed their identity in a game.
Yeah.
And then by the time Steve Spagnuolo tried to adjust to what they were doing, they went back to the identity that they had the first 4 weeks. And they had them so off balance. And it's just, you know, sometimes after a game, or if they lose, if they win, people call and say, like, I feel like the coaching was bad. I feel like the coaching was good. Man, the layout of this and what the Bills did against the Chiefs is a true credit to Brian Daboll and what he did offensively. I'm sure you could say the same for Leslie Frazier. This is just a breakdown of strictly the offense.
Yeah.
From Ollie Connolly and from the Bills and what they did with Josh Allen. So,
well, I think it's funny. I didn't check 2020 yet, but I was looking at Gilliam's, for what it's worth, Gilliam's snap count this season. from week one through Kansas City, right? 2, 14, well, I'll go percentage. 2%, 22%, 14%, 25% against Houston, and then 39%. So it's not like they haven't been using him, but that was a season high. I'll try and check 2020 because I'm curious about that. But that's when we do talk about coaching, right? That's when after a game, when you hear a player, let's say it's a quarterback, talk about, yeah, they showed us defensive looks that we hadn't seen on tape. And we sit there and go, brilliant. That's that, you know, this team outcoached the other team. Mm-hmm. They thoroughly confused them. They showed them different looks. They showed, you know, things. It's funny, right? The two games last year, I'm thinking about a guy like Matt Bowen, who does a great job breaking things down at ESPN, right? And last year, if you talked about the Bills matchups against Kansas City, I think we even had Matt Bowen on the station at some point talking about this. He would talk about, or it would be talked about with Kansas City, they're so good at disguising their coverages. They show Josh one thing, and then the snap, and then they do a completely different coverage. And it would have been, geez, I'm trying to think who would have said that. I don't know. One of the many analysts the other night basically said the Bills did that to Patrick Mahomes. That they, you know, Leslie Frazier's plan was brilliant. Rush 4, drop 7. Frazier on Monday talked about how we thought if we drop 7, it just gives us a lot more flexibility with what we could do in terms of coverages, with our disguise, with how we have guys moving around at the snap. Rush 4, drop 7, and he has no idea what you're doing with all 7 guys. You could do so many different things to try and confuse the quarterback. Well, they did. I mean, it worked. The Bills were able to really throw off Patrick Mahomes. So to the offensive side of things, Jeremy, this is what we love to hear, because it says, okay, our coaching staff came up with a much better game plan than the other guy. And we're mm-hmm. talking about Andy Reid, by the way, who's a pretty good coach. That our coaching staff came up with a much better plan than the other staff did and beat them offensively and defensively, outcoached them on both sides of the ball. And that's what you're always looking for, right? You want someone to say, yeah, you know what? Those guys were showing us looks that they hadn't put on tape at any point this season.
And one thing about all that is interesting is I mentioned to you yesterday, the next time that we're mad at the Bills, in finger quotes, or there's really any sort of controversy, I don't know when it'll be. We're going to watch this season play out, hope they win the Super Bowl. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. It might be when Brian Daboll starts interviewing for jobs. Mm. You know, we had a caller already today say, like, hey, would he go to Vegas and be the Raiders coach? And he's the favorite, you said, or one of the two
favorites? Second favorite behind Bieniemy.
Okay. I mean, Bieniemy's going in division there. When Brian Daboll leaves, it is the kind of thing where you kind of have to sign up for, you break up Allen and Daboll. And that will be a sad thing to break up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to hold back your offensive coordinator. If he dreams of being a head coach, I expect him to do that, right? Most guys would do that. You know, we got a couple of texts that wrote in and said, like, oh, I think he's got a good job. He'll stay like McDaniels. I mean, even McDaniels left. McDaniels left at one point to coach the Broncos and then went back. He got his crack at being a head coach. I guess he didn't like it. He accepted a second head coaching job with the Colts and, of course, went back to New England. And maybe he's waiting for Bill to retire. But trust me, I'd love it if he stayed the whole time and just had this relationship with Allen, and they had their success. More often than not, though, the coordinator will leave. And you hope the Bills can kind of keep it rolling,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, you hope that the quarterback, either the guy who succeeds the coordinator, in this case, I think we would all assume it would be Ken Dorsey, because he's been here, and he actually was given the title of passing game coordinator this season. You either hope the guy who is succeeding the coordinator is, there's not a big drop-off because he's been working hand-in-hand with that guy, and or your quarterback is at a point where he's good enough that he can, I don't want to say overcome, but mm-hmm. Not miss a beat if the primary play caller goes elsewhere. And I mean, I do believe Josh is at a point where he's developed, he's gotten better, he's learned enough that even without the security blanket of Brian Daboll, he would be fine in whatever the Bills decide to do. Again, most likely Ken Dorsey. I really think he's at a point where I would not. Very happy Daboll came back this season, in part because I was, okay, he's going to leave at some point, one more year working with Josh, and I'll be completely fine if Daboll moves on, thinking Josh will handle this. They'll be okay without him. Everybody on offense will be okay without him, which is a great place to be. Yeah, I would not be worried about Josh post-Daboll.
I might, a little bit. I mean, not like worried like he's going to completely
like
fall.
Like a big drop off, yeah.
Well, again, like this part of this piece points out that, and again, like the comparison was Mike McCarthy to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has been fine, of course. But if the whole idea of Allen is embracing that chaos and you're willing to accept that it's not going to be perfect on rhythm, you would hope that whoever takes the job after Daboll also does that. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to turn him into the kind of quarterback that he's not.
Right.
So we've seen this with the Sabres a little bit. Like, don't make Rasmus Dahlin stand in front of his own net as the thing he needs to fix and be good at.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be good at the other thing. Worry about his problems later. I mean, Allen's much more established and obviously great. You have to make sure that whoever steps in after Daboll leaves, when he leaves, whenever that is, would have the same mindset. It's just fascinating how the Bills have grown Allen into this, I mean, such a weapon. The throw to Sanders that we played the highlight, that's one of the ones you talk about, these throws that just can't be made by every quarterback in the league. There are a couple that can, but they hit 15 completions for 315 yards. You know, like that's not the most efficient day when you go 15 of 24 or something. But it's not about it, the most efficient. It's not about completion percentage. It's about what you do on the plays that you do hit.
Yeah.
At least it was against the Chiefs. So it was just a fascinating read, really cool. And I loved more than anything, Howard, reading and understanding how an entire coaching staff could basically not treat the first four games like the preseason,
mm-hmm.
but...
Well, they weren't vanilla, but they knew... By the way, so this means it wasn't just another game, right? The coach. I mean, I know that's what, I'm laughing because I know they say, oh, just the next game on the schedule. Not really if you're hanging out for four games and then you unleash this new radical.
Totally.
Wow, Kansas City, this is where we're coming to play, boys. So, yeah, of course they were looking at that.
Totally with you. That's why it spoke to me, too, because you don't have to tell me that it's a bigger game, but if everything you did for it suggests it was, like, perfect.
Yeah, it's your actions. It's not words. It's your actions.
And of all the games that were most likely to get them the one seed, that was it.
Yeah.
Your other tough games are in the NFC. You should win every other game you've got left in the AFC. And I'm sure they'll treat them with all the same, you know, do what you got to do. This one was supposed to be different. It was going to be the Chiefs. And they did it.
There was so much on the line for this game. Because of what it would be for you, but also, right, to essentially knock a contender out of the one seed race, which is really important. And again, the schedule too, right? I mean, I'm looking at it, you know, we're going to talk about Tennessee. They have a winning record. You know, the Bills only, I think it's, let me just double check my notes, of all the games left, only four of their opponents right now have a winning record. Mm. And three of those are in the NFC. So they have one conference opponent the rest of the season who has a winning record.
Is that New England?
Tennessee. They're 3-2.
Okay. It's Monday.
Yeah, that's it. And they're 3-2. Nobody else. The Jets, the Dolphins, the Jaguars, the Patriots. I think is that it for and Tennessee. I believe that's it for the AFC teams. So the teams with the winning records are Tampa, Carolina, and New Orleans. I mean, the schedule's playing out just grand at this point.
I mean, I would debate you about that being grand.
I think it's grand.
I will debate about that for another time, though. Real quickly, Paul tweets in, can I start a controversy? I'd rather keep Daboll and lose McDermott. There, I said it. I know you're going to totally shoot me down.
I wouldn't.
I'd just say this.
I'd rather keep McDermott.
I don't think it's a conversation we need to have right now because that does sound to me like the definition of you guys are trying to create a controversy.
Yeah.
But I will say that, you know, maybe in 23 weeks, that call comes more frequently.
Yeah, I think, okay, so whatever. We address anything we can on a talk show. That's fine. I would go back to, I believe there's enough in place if they lose Daboll that it wouldn't be a fatal blow. I think McDermott has been a very good influence on this franchise.
Mm-hmm,
I think he works extremely well. Not that Brian Daboll wouldn't if he was elevated to head coach, but I think he works extremely well with Brandon Bean. You feel like, as opposed to the hockey team, that the GM and the coach are very much in lockstep. I mean, we call him McBean, for goodness sake. it's almost like they're the same persona. So I think they work very well together. I think he's a really good influence. There are a lot of things to like about, you know, if you are into the culture discussion, great. The ability for this team, he does do a good job of keeping this team focused and not thinking, too much about a win over Kansas City or two games down the road or whatever. I think there are a lot of things I've come to like about Sean McDermott. I think he's evolved as a head coach, right, in terms of aggressiveness, not punting, going forward on fourth down, attacking inside the two-minute warning before halftime. So I think he's become a really good head coach. And I think if you were to move on from either coordinator, it's less of a discussion with Frazier, right, because McDermott's a defensive guy. But if you were to move on from either coordinator, I think the Bills have enough in place, they'd be fine. And I would like to keep the head of the body, so to speak. And if I had to lose one of the two, it would be, I think they could sustain Dable leaving. I'd be a little bit more concerned about what would they do at head coach if McDermott left for some reason, going anywhere, obviously.
If he did, the conversation there is that Dable would be elevated.
Yeah.
That's right. What Paul's saying.
Yeah, I know. I would just,
again,
if I'm losing one of the two, right, I would
We don't have to do it.
Yeah.
I think people might occasionally bring it up. It's not even the first time it's been brought up.
I wouldn't be surprised. How many people were freaking out, myself included, in the offseason with every Dable rumor we read, right? We're like, oh, no, don't talk to him. Someone, let's put out some fake stories so the Chargers don't speak to Brian Dable. I mean, right? We were all extremely worried, I know I was, about him taking another job. And when it played out that he was shut out for whatever reason, I thought that was huge. That was a great break for the Bills to have him back. So I understand the Dable discussion. 803-0550 to join us. Paul on the way next. We'll talk a little bit about the Buffalo Sabres, who will open the season at home tomorrow against Montreal. But first, we have some stuff to give away. If you are the fifth caller on our contest line right now, you've got a chance to win a $50 Shop 716 e-gift card, courtesy of Visit Buffalo Niagara. Again, caller 5 right now, 644-9878. We'll give away one of the cards. Again, $50 Shop 716 e-gift card, courtesy of Visit Buffalo Niagara. Contest number is 644-9878. Caller 5 gets that. We'll also remind you, you can visit Amherst.org/shop716 to buy a $25 Shop 716 e-gift card and get a bonus $25 card. Shop local, shop Erie County, limit one per purchaser while supplies last.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
NHL season opened last night. Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay, the Lightning raised their cup banner And Pittsburgh scores a victory, 6-2 over Tampa. Vegas and Seattle, the first game for the Seattle franchise. And Ryan Donato, the first goal in their franchise history. They do fall short, though. Vegas gets the 4-3 win. For the Sabres, no captain this year, not yet. Zemgus Girgensons and Kalaposo named the alternate captains for the Sabres. The league has announced that there are now four players that are unvaccinated. That's it, a grand total of four players. Meanwhile, Montreal will be in town tomorrow night for the Sabres opener. They play tonight, the Canadiens do, and they've also inked Nick Suzuki to an 8-year extension. The NFL Players Association says it plans to request the NFL release the rest of the 650,000 emails reviewed as part of the investigation into workplace misconduct with the Washington football team. The ALCS is set, Boston and Houston. Astros move through with a win 10-1 last night. In the National League, the Braves await the winner of the Dodgers and Giants series. That one's going to five games. The Braves win theirs in four. That's your Paddock Chevrolet sports headlines. Go to paddockchevrolet.com for the best pre-owned inventory.
It's Paul Hamilton.
He is a beat reporter for a team that has millions of fans. It is so ridiculous how many people he has blocked on Twitter over the most ridiculously stupid things. The man needs to grow up. He needs to have a little bit thicker skin.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Yeah, indeed. Time to chat with Mr. Paul Hamilton. He has not blocked me yet on Twitter, so that's a good thing. Paul's segment on our Western Hotline, by the way, brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda, relax, we got this. Sabres open at home against Montreal tomorrow night, of course, here on WGR. Paul, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Before we get to the Sabres, NHL returned to ESPN last night. Generally speaking, you caught some of it. What did you think about their game presentation or how everything went? As opposed to NBC?
It was technically a little bit rough. I mean, they had, you know, things like they wanted to go down to AJ for an interview, first of all, they were going to go to Linda Cohn, who was at the game, along with Weeks, and to talk to her. And then they had AJ preparing her interview to talk to Seattle's coach.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the air of her, like, trying to get set up and get ready. And then they were going to tape it. And you hear part of her first question. And then they can't figure out how to get to the studio. So they finally went to break. And so just, you know, little growing pains like that, I guess.
Speaking of growing pains. Very nice, Paul. Let's transition into the Buffalo Sabres. News of the day yesterday, the alternate captains. No big surprise on the two names, right?
Well, the way he presented it is, and the Granato, that is, they're going to share the captaincy type of thing, but mm-hmm. we're A's. It's like they're both the captains, but they're going to just wear A's and do it that way. So that's the way he presented it. So however you want to... the way I took it is they're basically sharing the captaincy, and they're not going to have a third.
All right.
You know, usually, if you don't have somebody wearing the C, you have three guys wearing the A. But he's not going to do it that way. He's just going to do it, have the two guys wear the A, and that's it. So he went with Girgensons and Oposo.
There are a number of questions I want to bring up. We had Don Granato on the show yesterday about players and who's doing what. And in no particular order, Paul, Tage Thompson at center. Granato seemed pretty excited to talk about that because of his size, his skill set, and what that could do in the middle as opposed to along the wings. So let's start there. What about trying Thompson at that spot?
One of the things he likes about it is, you know, he likes the idea of him being in the middle, because it gives him a chance to be able to go left, go right, and use his creativity. He said when he's on the wing, what happens is you get funneled to the wall, and the defenseman funnels you there, and the other defenseman takes away all your options. Where he says if he comes through the middle, he has a left option, he has a right option, and the defense can't do that to him. So, and he likes the creativity that he has in the middle. The only thing I question is, why did you wait so long to do it? Because it's something that he told Thompson during the summer. He had called him and talked to him that something that he probably wanted to try along the way. And I think maybe part of it was Gergensen's going at center wasn't going well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had anticipated that Gergensen's was going to play center this year. Matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, he talked about it, that, you know, he looks like he's going to be one of the centermen. But Zemgus had problems getting back, and that was his position. I mean, that's what he was drafted as, and that's what he was in the beginning in the NHL. But he's been a wing for so long that he had trouble adapting back at center, and it just wasn't working. So they put him back on the wing, and that's when Thompson got his opportunity to play some center. And so Granato liked it enough that he thinks he's a better centerman from what he's seen than a winger right now. So he wanted to stay with it because Ristolainen had played center for most of preseason, and then he went back to the wing for the last game. And Asplund, I think, played a little bit of center for a time. They just kept trying different people at center and having different opportunities at center. And the one that he liked the best wound up being Thompson, so he's going to stick with it.
You know, one thing about Thompson, Paul, I saw that, heard that, listened to Granato, and creativity I guess I want to give Thompson a little bit of benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's changed organizations. I don't want to say it's not gone well, but, you know, he's still very young and still trying to find his way. My beef with Thompson has often been overhandling the puck, and maybe at center that will be more natural than it would be on the wing because, you know, every once in a while he seems to get into his mind that he's going to stick handle around people. And I don't know, maybe a little bit of a shift there in mindset or a shift in position will allow him to, I don't know, scratch that itch. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've always felt like he's overhandled the puck, and now at center he'll, of course, have it often.
He had it, and quite honestly, watching him at center, he hasn't done that. I don't know why, and you would think you're going to have the puck more. But maybe being in the middle, he's got that vision of left to right, and he gets rid of it faster.
Yeah.
The thing he's got a great shot. The problem is he takes too long to take the shot. And very often, you know, they winds up getting tipped or whatever because he just takes too long to get it off. And I thought, boy, with a shot like his, if he could ever learn to get a quicker release on it, you know, he probably would be able to score some goals in this league. So he's going to turn 24 just as season start. I think it's late October, early November, that he's going to turn 24. So, you know, now's the time. I know ownership would like this trade to work. I mean, he and Johnson are the remnants of the O'Reilly trade. And Johnson is trending very well with the University of Minnesota, where he's playing on defense. He got a lot better last year. And just what I'm hearing this year, he's already off to a very good start with them. He was the late number one pick that they got in that trade. But, you know, ownership would like to see Tage Thompson work, because if Tage Thompson doesn't work and he doesn't make the league, that's just another piece of that puzzle that's going nowhere.
Paul, a follow-up to that. You know, you've said that several times with us. Should everyone apply that to the Eichel trade too? Whatever pieces come back, they really are going to want them to work to a point where those prospects, those players are front of the line, longest leash, whatever you want to say, like that it'll be very important that those players also succeed.
I think so, yeah. I think whatever they get back from that, it's going to be important for the resurgence of the organization. That's a trade that can't go south, because if it does, it's going to be just that much longer for this organization to get. I mean, part of this organization getting back on its feet is making a good trade for Eichel, and it's just essential. That's why Adams has held out for so long. I think the O'Reilly trade has been there for Adams all along, if he wanted it, but that's not going to be acceptable to get things that don't equal the value for Jack Eichel. So they're going to wait, because I think it's going to be very important for that asset to turn into other very good assets for this organization to turn itself around.
Paul with us on the Wester Hotline. Sabres, of course, open up against Montreal tomorrow night. Hey, one other thing I want to ask you about is Cousins, because you have written articles or tweets, whatever I've seen you talk, that he, you know, he hasn't looked that good over the course of the preseason. And so, you know, you and I talked about this, and I thought, all right, you know, I'm going to ask Don Granato about Cousins and the pressure that maybe he puts on himself. What have you seen from Cousins in the preseason? And Granato admitted that, yes, Dylan does that. He will carry a negative sometimes into the next day, into the next practice, but it's because he's so competitive and it actually drives him. How do you – is there a balance, Paul, where that's a good thing? Can it become too much of a negative and a bad thing if you can't move on? Just give me your thoughts on Cousins right now and maybe that discussion.
That's exactly what I've seen with him. It's he had a real rough preseason and very disappointing. He was not good at all. But in his case, it kind of sounds stupid to say trying too hard.
Yeah.
You know, where he puts so much pressure on himself, you know, he expects to be scoring goals. He expects to be producing points. He expects to be able to shut down the other team, so they're not getting scoring chances. He expects to have more scoring chances on the ice than the other team. You know, he expects those things. And when those things don't happen for him and the mistake is made, he gets very angry with himself and he takes it with him, you know, on the ice and you know, starts beating himself up. And instead of worrying about the next shift of being better, he's worried about the last shift, you know, that he was awful. And that he could be so much better, and he knows he could be so much better, and it just dominates him. And so, yeah, that's, you know, being, I think really he's his own worst enemy right now, where he's just so hard on himself and beats himself up that I think has an effect on his play. And, you know, that's something, I would think that's something that's a fairly easy correct, you know, that especially when things, if he has a little stretch where things start going well for him,
yep,
you know, I think that's when maybe that part of his game might go away and he might mature a little bit with that. But, it wasn't the preseason I was expecting from him, or I think fans were hoping for him. But I don't think it's because he's a bad hockey player, because he's not. I think he's a very good hockey player and is going to be for many years to come for this team. But I think right now he's got to overcome the mental part of the game.
Paul, with regard to, you know, Cousins, young guys, I say this with absolutely no snark. One of Granato's challenges, I think, is helping these guys deal with losing, right? I mean, they're going to be a lot of long nights. I mean, a lot of losing streaks, a lot of goals against. I mean, the say what you will about the roster, about they've got this and that. They're trying at center, their overhauled defense, their goaltenders. These young players are expected to lose a lot of games, and Granato's challenge is to, of course, keep them engaged, keep their fire. They're professionals. I get all that. As you talk about Cousins there and lay out how personally he takes it, like, I just think it's going to be tough for Granato to kind of walk that walk. You know what I mean?
It will be, from the fact because they don't. Some of those young players don't think for one second that you, me, or anybody else is right about that.
Yeah.
They don't. I don't think they think they're Stanley Cup contender this year, but I think Dahlin, Cousins, Mittelstadt, they firmly believe they're going to show that we're wrong. Everybody that's saying that they're the worst team in the National Hockey League and that they're going to have a bunch of losing streaks are going to be wrong. That, you know, they are going to overachieve this year, and they firmly believe that. So if all of a sudden 10-game losing streak comes rolling around, it will take them by surprise, because that's not what they're – and quite honestly, as I look at it, I'm glad they do think that way.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't want them going into the season thinking, are we the worst team in the league? Is Seattle better than us? Really? You know, are we the worst team again? I'm glad they honestly believe that. And we'll see where it takes them. You know, whether you have a better coach who's going to have a better system for you, and, you know, what that's going to do for you, where it's going to take you, and We'll see. We'll see if they are. Let me put it this way. I'm not predicting it at all. It wouldn't shock me if they're better than people think they are. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs or anything like that. But if they are okay and win more games than we think they're going to win, I wouldn't sit here and say, boy, am I really, really surprised. I never would have guessed that. Just because I think Granato's a pretty good coach and the way he approaches things with them. To me, that's an accomplishment right there, that he has them believing that what we're saying and other people are saying is wrong, honestly believing it, with all their hearts, that we're not what people think we are, and we're going to go out and show them. Well,
very quick, because we've got to go, but I saw side-by-side of the 2014-15 Sabres, like the last time it looked like they were bottoming out, and this roster looks better than that roster. The only difference might be goaltending. That roster, when they were bad before, they just kept falling on good goalies. And right about now, I don't know if that's going to be the case. How should people feel about their goaltenders going into the season?
That's the thing. If you're not getting big saves, you're not going to pull off being better than people think you are. You got to get the big saves. This team is not going to win 6-5 games all the time. Occasionally, maybe they will if the other goaltender has a rough night. But that's not going to be. If your goaltending is the worst in the league and you're giving up 4, 4.5, 5 goals a game, you are going to be on losing streaks and things like that. So you got to be able to get the big save from your goaltender. Both goaltenders had a nice preseason. That's preseason. And, we'll see where it goes from there. Tokarski, give him credit, for what he did in the preseason. And can he carry it over in the regular season when he gets opportunity? Anderson, I thought he looked good preseason. He was fine in the game against Detroit. He didn't have a whole lot of action, but did his job. And, I thought he played pretty well in preseason too. But preseason is a lot different than when the regular season starts.
Mr. Hamilton, thank you, sir, as always, for your time, and have a marvelous Wednesday.
Take care, guys.
All right, Paul. Paul brought to us by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Hey, you should tweet us today, because it's Wednesday, which means it's Hoagie Hump Day, and maybe we'll get you a gift card to Jim's Steakout. All you need to do is tweet at WGR550 and use the hashtag Hoagie Hump Day. That's it. You're in the running for a $25 gift card to Jim's Steakout. Jim's Steakout, get your hoagie on. Visit jimsteakout.com. So I got a quick stat of the day. We got to be really short here. We're super, ooper duper late. I know. You're all shocked. So quick stat of the day. Someone tweeted this at me, and I thought, really? Is that possible? Stat of the day. A bonus stat of the day, by the way, brought to you by Cows of Buffalo. Rent a cow today. Call 592-3343. Someone tweeted and said the Jacksonville Jaguars have not made a field goal this season. And I thought, really? We're 5 games in. I know they're bad and everything, and I don't know how often they get into scoring territory and all that. So I checked it out. It is correct. Jacksonville is the only team in the NFL at this point who have yet to have a successful field goal. Now, they've only attempted 4, which seems like a low number too, They're 0-for-4 in field goals this season. For context, and I thought, okay, is that really crazy freaky? The Saints have also only attempted 4 field goals. They've made 1. So those are the 2 lowest teams in the everybody else has made at least 3. So it's not crazy stupid as I thought it was, but whatever. 5 games in, they still don't have a field goal made on the season. And I feel like with a rookie quarterback and you might be having trouble getting into the end zone, maybe you're settling for field goals more. They only have 4 attempts in their first 5 games. So thank you to the person who sent that stat in to me.
Quick follow-up. Remember yesterday we wildly speculated that Danny Ricciardo and McLaren had given Emmanuel Sanders his McLaren jacket.
Yeah.
Again, don't have anything to back that up. Yesterday the Bills tweeted out a message from Daniel Ricciardo wearing a number 3 Bills jersey.
Ooh.
He's coming.
He's definitely coming. See, now you get me excited. He's definitely showing up.
Just saying.
All right. He's definitely going to be here. Sal's on the way next. He's going to talk Bills football with us. If you got a question, comment, opinion on the Bills, dial us up. We'll work you in with Sal. 803-0550 to join us on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.